Okay, let's sink into silence, although I just want to say this is going to be recorded since a couple of people who couldn't be here asked that it would be, so it will be. So let's just settle, and I'll speak out of that silence. And I expect that what will happen is I'll probably talk for half an hour or something and then have questions, although if you have really urgent questions, you can feel free to interrupt and ask them then. But I will, and I will also try to remember to keep my chin up and speak up. So let's settle into silence. So, Quakers rose up in the 17th century, and you can imagine there were bunches of seekers, lots of religious vermin in England. When you get taken over by the Holy Spirit the way Friends did, what do you do with that energy? What do you do with all of that energy? How to build a community, how to regulate, so to speak, your life together. And what happened, immediately the tension that has always existed between the individual, the one who gets visited, and the community, that tension has led to all of these disciplines and growth and everything else, that if you did feel something, you would test it in the community. So it was sort of both an individual experience and a community experience. And that balance and the wisdom of the community was trusted over the wisdom of the individual most times. So, and the way that one finds clarity also was quite early developed, and that is queries. So the first queries were, New England, you're lucky. New England was the first yearly meeting. 1661 is the first time that New England gathered. And it was before London yearly meeting either, but that is because Friends in London were in jail. And Friends in Rhode Island were not. So Friends in Rhode Island could gather in 1661. So there's this fermenting period. And then in New England, in 1706, the first queries were introduced. And those queries, the two general queries, you look at each year at least, if not sooner. First was, how does truth prosper among you? Big question. And the second one was, who has suffered for the faith? Because people were in jail and everything else, and they were taken care of. many witnesses. The first, so to speak, testimonies of Friends were, there was only one testimony, and that was the testimony to truth. And truth, of course, would be perceived by the group, and it would change. I mean, there was a continuing revelation of it. The big truth would never change, but our perception of it would. So in asking these questions, you would keep an eye on how closely you were living to whatever, to a testimony that felt true in the body of the worshippers, so to speak. And the first testimonies were against something. So there would be truth testimony against bearing arms. Very specific things. Truth testimony against wearing hats. Truth testimony about the familiar language. Against using it. So that was the thou. That if all friends were, if everybody was equal, you would just address people by the and thou, everybody. So, and George Fox addressed the king as Charles Stuart. No title, no king. So those were testimonies, the truth testimony against specific behaviors. And then by the time these queries are asked, you can see how it's sort of trying to regulate a community, if you will. So our friends careful to bring in their sufferings for truth testimony that they may be recording. So we got to know what you're doing if you're suffering. So you need to do that. But also, if any offer an apprentice or any master want an apprentice, and if friends, be careful not to put forth their children as apprentices to the world's people. So again, very specific, big range of testimony from large questions to very small ones. How do all friends keep their testimony to the truth in refusing to pay to the maintenance of the hireling ministers? We're going to pay for hiring ministers in the Church of England. So that's how the sort of discipline, if you will, started. The guidance, I suppose you could say the skeleton on which you could put the flesh of your leading in specific areas. So the first discipline in New England was, for a whole book, was 1760. And what New England did then was simply to adopt London, who had developed a discipline. But the first discipline for the meetings in the Americas, in the U.S., was 1809, was the first one that really, and that's this one right here. There's a book, which I highly recommend, called The Old Discipline, which has the 1809 discipline of New England, Philadelphia, Baltimore, somebody else, Canada, all were pretty similar. So that's sort of the old discipline. And you can see this is kind of thin compared with, actually it's not, this one. But the way disciplines first happened, you would get a printed copy like this. And in the very beginning, of course, there would be one copy that every quarterly meeting actually would have. And you were expected then to copy that out for the monthly meetings by hand. Then later when they're printed, printing was expensive, so you have the printed book. And then if there were any changes, this is why I love these old books, they would be handwritten in the book, right there, handwritten in the book, because every entry in these old books has a date on it. You know, 1744 is this one, which is on defamation and detraction. So this was 1706. That this one was to be added. So, why is it? No, it must be 1766. So, you would make very few changes if this was going to be the process. And every so often, when it was reprinted, so that particular advice will be in this one, you know, the next one, the 1856 printing. So that the other thing about these early disciplines is that there's no judgment on the importance of any particular topic. So that these disciplines are alphabetical. So the table of contents goes from accounts, acknowledgments, appeals, arbitration, arms, auditors, bankruptcy, backbiting, Bible, births, books, burials, conduct and conversation, education, elders, hireling ministry, import duties and excise, language, immoral transgressors to be dealt with, marriage, love and unity, marriage, meetings for discipline, meetings for worship. So meetings for worship is under M for meetings. It's not at the top, you know. So, and you go on to Negroes and slaves, oaths, orphans, wills, executors, parents and guardians, quarterly meetings, records, removals, scriptures, schools, scriptures, spiritus liquors, sleeping in our religious meetings. Oh, it's not allowed. All right, 135, I will read it. This is a sleeping in religious meetings was approved by the yearly meeting. It doesn't have a date.
And how long were their meetings?
Oh, 2 hours, 3 hours. Right. 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 Such as therefore who so far as is big and long, but neglect their duty herein is to sleep, or by nodding or bowing the head or other apparent signs of sleep, should reproach themselves, bringing a burden on the faithful and dishonoring the truth, are to be treated tenderly with for their recovery. So, the disciplines, the early ones, also, if you went against the discipline, sort of happening into the 19th century, there, you would be disowned. So if there was a disownable offense, then you could be disowned for it. Like, if that says you should not pay hireling ministers, and if you did, you could be disowned.
What is the hireling
ministers? Hireling ministers are paying priests, paying anybody. So early friends didn't have any paid clergy. They just had people who stood up and spoke and worshiped.
But hireling is the adjective that's
from paid.
It's for paid.
Just
paid ministry.
Okay.
Right. And, right, let me just finish. My mind isn't as good as it used to be. But, where was I? I was on...
Written out of meeting.
Disowned,
yes. And to see what disowned meant, actually, this little handwritten thing in here says, it is the judgment of this meeting that no person that is out of unity with friends or under dealing of friends for any miscarriages, this is the definition then of disowning, ought to be suffered to sit in meetings for business, nor their collections to be received. So you can't even give money to the meeting if you're disowned, but be desired to withdraw from such meetings as until such time as they give satisfaction for such their miscarriages. It went, during the 19th century, disownment got out of hand. You could be disowned for marrying the wrong kind of Quaker. You know, after the splits, there were all sorts of things, simple things. Disowned for having a piano in your house, for the length of the fringe on your chairs, whatever. So that the form got sterile. But in the beginning, you think now about tax refusal, which is a choice that people can make. But in the beginning, you were not to pay taxes. You were not to pay. And if you did, you were disowned. You went to jail, whatever. And so there was no freedom to follow your individual conscience in this regard. If friends said you didn't bear arms, you didn't bear arms, period. You didn't have a choice to be a conscientious objector or anything else. You just didn't.
I was just going to say, the reason why you didn't pay taxes is because taxes paid for hireling ministers in every incorporated town had to have a hireling minister, and that minister was paid for by the town.
Right.
So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Yep. So you were.
That's part of government, original government in the United States.
Right. And it was true in England as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So don't do that. But when I love this phrase in the conservative disciplines, I say testimony is the faith and practice will change. You will need to re-examine what you have learned if there's social or spiritual inharmonies. And that's why things would change. Oh, I first should say, like disownment, Quakers, first they traded in slaves. They had slaves for a long time. And you can follow their position on slavery. It took a long time before owning slaves was a disownable offense. So you did have liberty of conscience, so to speak, in regard to slavery. Actually, first in regard to being a slave trader, which some Quakers were. They traded in slaves. So when these social and spiritual disharmonies were noticed, then the revision, the discipline would be revised. And the 1809 discipline, which is this standard one, in 1845, New England split into a Gurneyite yearly meeting and a Wilburite yearly meeting, and I don't need to explain that to you, but they're just two yearly meetings then. And what's interesting is, you know, no matter what the reasons were for the split, they both used the 1809 discipline. New England yearly meeting Gurneyite, the Gurneyite yearly meeting, used it until 1872. They didn't revise their discipline until 1872. And the Wilburite yearly meeting didn't revise it until 1930. Almost a century. And the reason is because in the Gurneyite yearly meeting, the pastoral system came in. So at the end of the 19th century, the pastoral system entered Friends in the Midwest and elsewhere. So there were pastors, hireling ministers. And so the discipline changed in many other ways as well. So after the old discipline, I don't have a copy of the 1872 Gurneyite revision, but the 1930 Wilburite revision is this. So this was the Wilburites who kept having no hireling ministers. They were closest to the practices in England. They were conservative in the conserve English forms kind of way. They were very small by 1945 when those two yearly meetings, the Gurneyite yearly meeting and the Wilburite yearly meeting, and the Connecticut Valley Association, which we were part of, Naomi was part of this, and Providence meeting and Cambridge meeting. All of those meetings had not, like the Connecticut Valley people, were not going to join either yearly meeting. That kind of split among friends. Actually, the First World War started. If we're pacifists, if we're against war, how come we've got these splits? Now, it took until 1945 for, in the Second World War, for it to happen. But in 1945, all of those groups came together to form New England Yearly Meeting, the New England Yearly Meeting we know today. And the first attempt, actually in 1945 also, the 5 years meeting of Friends, which were the Gurneyites, which is now FUM, tried to put out a uniform discipline. Now that's the other thing I should have said in the beginning. Because the way the disciplines are formed have to be a corporately agreed upon practices, there's no overall faith and practice for all friends. You just wouldn't get agreement that far. And so yearly meeting is sort of the highest unit, if you will, that can approve a faith and practice, or that has approved a faith and practice. So there's New England Yearly Meeting, New York Yearly Meeting, lots of yearly meetings in the world. In the U.S., it's those yearly meetings that have disciplines, books of faith and practice. Actually, you notice that by 1930, this is called faith and practice instead of discipline. And it contains a lot. It is not anymore arranged by alphabetical topic. It is constructed with a lead table of contents, so to speak, in how you would describe yourself. Things are not equally weighted in terms of front to back of the book. And although this is called a book of Christian discipline, the faith and practice, so this, as is implied by the title, is the first time that faith and practice are separated. So part of the book's on faith and part of it's on practice. That's also what 5 Years Meeting did. And they, in 1900, tried to have a common discipline for all the yearly meetings of the 5 Years meeting. Didn't work. New England didn't approve it. So they tried again in 1945 to have a discipline that everybody would agree on in the Gurneyite yearly meetings. And New England at that time was reuniting. And it minuted that it wasn't going to even, deal with this because it was going to look at it as it made its own faith and practice, which it did in 1950. So this is the first faith and practice of the United Yearly Meeting, 1950, and it pretty much follows the 5 Years Meeting pattern, because at the time New England united, the 5 largest meetings in New England...
Excuse me, is that United New England Yearly Meeting?
United New England Yearly Meeting Gurneyite, New England Yearly Meeting Wilburite, Connecticut Valley, Cambridge.
They're all united.
All under United New England?
No, all under New England Yearly Meeting.
Okay.
So now, no, United. 1945 is that
but
important.
But they were all united.
But they're all united. They're one yearly meeting. Because actually, the Gurneyite Yearly Meeting was the Yearly Meeting of Friends for New England, and the Wilburites were New England Yearly Meeting of Friends. And so they all became New England Yearly Meeting of Friends, plus those other 3 groups. So this is the first... I was saying the New England Yearly Meeting in 1945, the 5 largest meetings were all pastoral, and they were all in urban centers. 2 in Portland, Maine, Worcester... Boston, and New England Yearly Meeting was not part of Friends General Conference. It was only part of 5 Years Meeting, Friends Now Meeting. And it took actually 13 years of process for New England to join Friends General Conference, the more liberal, unprogrammed, larger body. And that, when you look at the minutes of the yearly meeting, you can see what careful work some friends made as this movement toward accepting membership, or toward joining Friends General Conference made. And what was also happening in these 13 years was that the yearly meeting had changed. Because I told you about 1945. By 1985, the 5 largest meetings in New England were all unprogrammed, and they were all in university towns. A huge shift culturally and in every other way. One of the, I think, loving things that was done after 1950 was they immediately got another Faith and Practice Revision Committee to try to represent the more united, one would say, yearly meeting. So this Faith and Practice is 1966. And New England joined Friends General Conference in 1959. So this includes a sense of the threads that were now present in New England in after it joined French General Conference, and that only has continued to change. And then, after the 1956, and after 66, is 1985. And that's the current one that's being revised. And the current revision committee was appointed in 2000. And so we have been working, in 2001, we have been working for, you know, this is our 13th year, we've been working for 12 years, and you would say, why bother? You know, what is happening here? But the process of working on this faith and practice in a committee of 15, 16 people is so exhausting and so invigorating. And what we said to ourselves is that why would you go through the process of revising faith and practice? Because the process, oh, I should say this too, the process of revising is that proposed text gets sent out to all the monthly meetings, and people respond. People send in what they think, and the revision committee takes all of that into account and tries to then get another text out that will be approved. And so that there's ample opportunity for people to be involved in the process. Your voice is heard and really does affect what happens in the committee. Of course, the committee has its own light as well. I mean, we take this in, but then things rise up and we proceed as led, so to speak. But when we said, why bother? You know, why revise? Why? What can faith and practice do? These are the things we said to the meeting. It strengthens individual faith. It can. It helps us know one another more deeply in things spiritual. It increases awareness of the corporate truth of New England, which is always changing as the corporate truth of Mount Toby is. We ponder the relationship of individual truth, whether ours or our meetings, to the corporate truth of New England. It's a witness to other yearly meetings about what truth we have tasted. And it's a practical guide. One of the things that Faith and Practice has in the back is an appendix, which gives you the relevant laws in the various states for Quakers, so that when I was clerk of New England, I really appreciated this. You know, so what is the law on marriage? How does Quaker marriage happen? You look at the appendix, and there are the state laws. And in the old days, I went down to the Jones Library, and I could pull out Title 33, Section 5, and look at it.
This is Massachusetts?
Massachusetts.
Regarding Quakers?
There's definite topics where Quakers have special laws, like affirming instead of swearing. Marriage, for sure. I think it's Quakers, Baha'i, and somebody else are empowered to follow their own process in marriage. You don't have a ministry. You don't have a pastor that's fine.
But this is the government of Massachusetts?
Yes.
Has laws regarding...
Yes. Yeah. Actually, the government everywhere has laws regarding not just Quakers, but anybody who doesn't have a pastoral system where the minister is the one given the power to whatever. This brings me to another point, actually, that one of the things I've learned in studying faith and practice is we have no idea, sort of viscerally, how free we are as Quakers. We have these laws that says, yeah, you can marry that way. You know, you can just have, you know, your clerk sign a marriage license and that's it. We can do that. We have conscientious objection. We have lots of ways that we have challenged, Quakers and others, have challenged the laws and have special privileges. However, If you're in Kenya, where homosexuality is illegal, the church also has to have legal permission to exist. And when I was at a conference in the Netherlands, some friends objected to an epistle that where the draft epistle said the awareness of homosexuality among friends. And an African friend said, could we change that to the awareness of homosexuality among some friends in some countries? And he came up to my friend and I afterwards to say, the reason I had to say that is, if in Kenya we had something that said there was an acceptance of homosexuality among friends, our church would be closed down. In Bolivia, in Peru, the beginning page of Faith and Practice gives the number of the law that gives that church the permission to exist. We have no idea of this. I was really aware. Conscientious objection? At this same conference, you know, Northeast friends were, you know, First World friends were waving around about, we should all, you know, petition our governments, protest to our governments. And some Third World friend said, are you kidding? You know, I can't do that. So, I think I just want to say one more thing and then I'll open it to questions. The process that we have used, the Faith and Practice Revision has used, because New England Yearly Meeting is changing at the same, has been changing over the past 10 years. It's changed its staffing, it's changed its sort of the balance of friends in the yearly meeting. Lots has been changing. It's been unstable. And so Faith and Practice has to represent, it has to present text that can be approved by the yearly meeting. And where we discovered in the 85 Faith and Practice some sections that needed revision, we would have to say to those friends in the yearly meeting, we'll say like ministering council, this doesn't seem right. This isn't right anymore. Can you say what the practice is now? You said that to permanent board. Can you say what the practice is now? And they couldn't. So we can't move until those questions are resolved. Those questions of polity are resolved.
And why couldn't they?
Because the whole... They couldn't because they didn't. They didn't. They were busy with other things. They were busy looking at staff structures, and they were busy looking at a change in the yearly meeting secretary. Then there's, it's hard. I don't want to get off on yearly meeting because Faith and Practice is for everyone, for monthly meetings, quarterly meetings, and yearly meetings. And so we started with confidence, as we said in this little thing, that we maintain our faith that if we listen to the Spirit's guidance and a life in the yearly meeting, the book will grow organically in ways that nurture that life. We started, of course, with the preface. And we said that we were going to affirm all language, that we were not going to change any, that we were going to accept the faith expression in whatever language it came forth. And there was lots of wonderful discussion about that, even here at Mount Toby as well. The first preface we brought in really got smashed, and we changed it to three sentences. But it says that. It does say that. That... this revision of New England Yearly Meeting Faith and Practice reflects a range of spiritual experience among friends. Each selection retains the original language used by the individual or faith community. Again, some little statement like that can bring a lot of discernment on everybody's part, and we have to be willing to say that together as a yearly meeting. which we did. And then, after that, we went to worship, of course, the worship chapter. And we then moved to corporate discernment. And we started in on advices and queries, but somehow that didn't work. It didn't have life, so we dropped that. And after worship and corporate discernment, we went to testimonies. What we called, actually I should say, in the second year, we sent out a questionnaire about what friends would like to see in their faith and practice. And one of the consistent things that people wanted, they wanted a definitive list of the testimony. Definitive list. Because there are many, 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 many lists all over the world of the testimonies. So we put out this, the chapter that we called, I can't even remember the old title of it. Let's see. Integration of Faith and Life, the Meaning and Understanding and Use of Testimonies. The other decision we made was we were not going to have two sections, faith and practice. We were going to bring them together. It's going to be one united book. Well, the response we got to that working paper was, we don't like it. We still want the testimony. Some people appreciated that what we were trying to do, but now this was not what people had in mind. We wanted a list. And then we weren't led to revise that. We went on to other chapters, to the illustrative experiences of friends and to the general advices and queries. Most yearly meeting faith and practices have general advices and queries, and not queries within the chapters. One of the other decisions we made was to put queries on worship in the worship chapter, queries on corporate discernment in the corporate discernment chapter, and then our general advices and queries chapter tried to get, as we had done with testimony, behind advices and queries and have queries that sort of led you to where everything came from instead of on a topic like worship or corporate discernment or peace or anything. And so that's what we did with that chapter. And 2 years ago then we decided we needed to come back and to the testimonies chapter and revise it or do something with it. And again, we wrestled and wrestled and wrestled. It just, we were still very clear that we were not going to list, give a definitive list of the testimonies. And we looked at other yearly meetings to see how they handled testimonies. And again, you find a different list in different yearly meeting disciplines, faith and practices. And so we just seemed stymied. But then we realized, actually, we felt greatly encouraged. There was a friend's journal on testimonies, and a couple of the articles in that said the same thing we did, and the same thing that Jenny said this morning at 9 o'clock. Testimonies can become empty forms as well. They don't mean anything anymore. They're just there. And you actually think of, like, the peace testimony. What is that? You know, when the Iraq War came around, it, the whole, when Scott Simon said he, in Bosnia, he wouldn't approve of troops going in. Oh, how can a Quaker say that? That's not the peace testimony. And for some people, you know, peace testimony is too big. It's not like testimony against bearing arms, which is very specific. So we sort of were aware of all we had learned in trying to convey and why we still were not going to do a chapter on testimonies. And this is a direction that, you know, we were surprised of anybody else. So we came up with this little thing travels with testimonies, what we had learned from all of this, and how we were not ever going to do a chapter on testimonies, but we were going to try to integrate the idea of testimony into the whole book. We became aware that when you say Quaker testimonies, what most people mean is the social testimonies. They don't mean the religious testimonies. So that, I said this morning too, that when you look at the old disciplines and the idea that our whole lives, both individual and corporate, are testimonies, worship is a testimony. Worship, waiting worship, sitting there in silence expectantly is a testimony. And so is the way we do business. And some yearly meetings list that as testimonies. So testimony is much bigger than just what we think of as the testimonies. And we have trying to live this out, you know, figuring out how we're going to do the rest of the book, integrating this, is a real challenge. We haven't decided how to do it yet. We're in the process. But so this is where the you can be part of this. We'll probably bring something to yearly meeting this summer, a text that attempts to do it in terms of organization. So that, for example, in terms of organization, we are not going to describe physically, this is the yearly meeting, this is the quarterly meeting, this is the monthly meeting, but to say what areas need attention in a meeting for it to nurture it and to flower and to, you know, thrive. What things do we have to pay attention to? And after that, say how those things happen at the different levels. But all of our Quaker communities at whatever level need the same things, need to pay attention to the same things. And how you do that can differ as well. But that's where we are. And I'll just read from this. I brought 30 copies of this, but just to say, we have sensed both the narrowing of focus necessary to express that all testimonies come from one source, and the expansion of focus necessary to realize that our whole lives, personal and communal, are our testimony. So that one of our testimonies, because we had this individual corporate tension, when we have a sense of the meeting and meeting for business, everybody is not in total agreement with the action being taken, but the sense of the meeting is that we're going to move in this way and some people are not comfortable with it. Living that, living with each other, disagreeing, is a testimony. That we don't all, one of the hard things we did in the corporate discernment chapter was to say there isn't any such thing as standing in the way. You know, a person can't say, you can't move because I say you can't. Individuals don't have that much power. The clerk has to call it. To say, standing aside is another thing, but standing in the way, nobody can state that they stand in the way and be believed as an individual. It has to be tested corporately. So that living together with a sense of the meeting that you don't agree with, and that's exactly what faith and practice is. We know not everyone will agree with everything in faith and practice. Some people will find parts of it really hard and awful. But we can agree that this is us. This is us. And that's just an incredible thing to witness to. So that books of faith and practice are that. This is what we can say together. And we figure out, personally, and as a meeting, our own relationship to it. For example, when we first met, the committee said, so, if there was a conflict between what Faith and Practice said and what our monthly meeting was led to do, which one would we go for? We all said our monthly meeting, which is exactly right. That isn't true in all yearly meetings. It's especially true in New England because the yearly meeting as a whole has not come to unity on taking same-gender marriages under its care. But over the years, you know, first in Connecticut Valley, 5, 7, 9, and now they're almost three-quarters of the meetings in New England take same-gender marriages under their care. The yearly meeting still doesn't. But those monthly meetings can stand in their own integrity because it was tested. So, I think I would like to see if you have any questions. Now that I've gone on for so long. Daniel.
So, what instigated this current revision? Was there some... I mean, why... I can see you have some reasons of why you decided that we're doing it, and these are good reasons for doing it, but what started the process in the first place? Was there some issue that people had with the old one, or...?
Not particularly. There wasn't an issue, but there was just a sense that... Because basically the form between these three didn't change much. And there was a sense that with younger people coming in, it just didn't speak to them. The language is a lot of shoulds, which we agree when we look at it. So it isn't just that the yearly meeting was changing, it's just that the expression of our faith seemed...
So was there some meeting at sessions that decided, oh, we need to write a new...
There was a faith and practice review committee appointed by permanent board, and the review committee reviewed the 85 faith and practice and came back to permanent board and said, we think we need a full-fledged... And that came to yearly meeting in 2000, and yearly meeting said, yes, we agree, and we ask you to appoint the committee, and then in 2001, the committee was appointed. So it went through a process.
Melissa. I think this is incredibly valuable. History is always valuable. But getting back to the roots and being able to see something new bloom from them is incredible. And I think what you're doing is an extraordinary work that should it flower into the world as a means of interacting with one another, as we're going to have to, with such diversity of thought and opinion and depth of feeling that we all have. It's the kind of process, regardless of... And the abstinence from results.
Yeah.
That is so important, I think, in the work that you're doing. I don't really have a question. I have incredible encouragement and support.
Thank you.
Let me just say, this is in our library and is what chapters we've currently given preliminary approval to. And we hope that by yearly meeting sessions, there will be a published interim faith and practice, which is how far we've come so far, which is the basis of it. And a lot of people, it's online, but it's, you know, for some people...
It's hard work.
Yes. So it'll be out so you can have it in your bedside table and look at it. Jeff, you...
I have to say, a lot of the history in the last 13, 14 years, I think, are probably familiar to a lot of us, but the spirit that you bring to it, and the energy, and the process over the last dozen years, this flow back and forth between you and the committee and those of us out here and back and forth and back, that has just been amazing. So, not a question.
Yeah. Well, it is, and we can use your prayers and your comments. I mean, basically, it's hard, hard work. It really is. It's a lot to discern, and your heart gets bigger because you have to discern more and more and more.
Well, first of all, a comment and thanking you, but then the question, the comment is that you were describing what your group went through over and over, meeting together. I would say that is worship. Everything you're doing now was really worship.
Absolutely.
And such a strong sense of worship that wouldn't want to miss it the next time. But about why to revise, when I was, a committee met with me to decide whether I would become a Quaker, I was given no reading of any sort, no faith and practice or anything to read, and somehow they decided I could be a Quaker. But when I seriously read the Faith and Practice, the 85 edition, I decided I wasn't a Quaker.
Yeah.
And I did discuss that with a couple of people. I almost thought of bringing it to the meeting, resigning and explaining why. But other people convinced me to stay. Mm-hmm. But you should read that and then see if you want it revised. I'm just sort of teasing you a little bit. But,
people will probably ask you this one, but do you have a sense of when this will be completed? Mm-hmm. And then the other part of it is, I'm assuming that it is going to be a few more years, and this has been, you know, over a decade of sustaining this dedication and devotion and keeping the life in it. So if you could speak to that, how you keep that light and life.
It's just grace. It's just grace. We don't know when it will be finished. And I actually, from time to time, have the fear that I'll die being at the Practice Revision Committee, or have to leave before then because I get dementia. But I think there are only 5 people from the original 15 that have served this whole time. Others have served almost that whole time, but. What sustains us, I think, is, well, we learn new forms, here's what sustains me. When was it? We had a horrible, after we made this decision, testimonies, and we tried to see the way forward with the core chapters, it was a horrible meeting, and I came home from that meeting not even wanting to go to worship the next day, which is really rare. But I forced myself to go to worship. I was just, and as usual, God's little gifts. There were several elders, people who knew me well, that came to worship that day. They were at Woman Hill. And afterwards, so I just poured out my heart to them and said, look, you know, I've lost my gift. I've lost my call. I mean, the reason I took it in the first place, because I was called. And I know well, and so does everybody on the committee share this, unless you're called, you won't be sustained. But if you are called, you can work hard. So I said, I've lost my call, I've lost my gift. And one of those elders said to me, you haven't lost your gift. Your gift is much more than faith and practice. And I took that to my oversight committee. I have an oversight committee. And my oversight committee really wrestled with me about had I lost my call, had I lost my gift. And Carlos can speak to that. Dory, no, Dory, you weren't there at the time, but Carlos was. And without that oversight committee, I could not do what I do. I am so grateful to Mount Toby Ministry and Worship for appointing it. I would be a mess and probably not have continued if I didn't have that committee reminding me, you're still called. Let's test this. Oh, rats, I'm still called. You know, so that's, I don't know. And
do others in this 15, do they have oversight committees through their monthly meetings?
No.
Do they have that kind of support?
They have different kinds of support. Nobody actually carries it to the extent I do, because I carry the whole, and we have little working groups and we have people within. But and one of them is a pastor, and she has her own several of them actually do have oversight committees for the ministries that they do elsewhere, of which Faith and Practice is a part. But, yeah. And we support each other, for sure, pray for each other. We know lots of people are praying for us, and when we're at yearly meetings, some people will sidle up and say that. And we say thank you, because we couldn't do it unless we had a sense of the yearly meeting praying for us and realizing the difficulty of the task we've taken on. And in fact, if you want another opportunity for prayer, yesterday was Faith and Practice Revision, and so Susan Davies, Nan's sister, is on Faith and Practice Revision, and she and I are doing a workshop at the Quakers Uniting and Publications meeting at Woolman Hill called New England Yearly Meeting Faith and Practice, a case study. And we think, oh my gosh, because they're right in the middle. Mm-hmm. You know, and basically the whole committee is saying, we have confidence in you, we have nothing to apologize for, we have been obedient, we have nothing to defend, we are what we are, and that's it. And Susan and I felt good. I'll do it. But it's, that isn't to say there's not really low times where you say, oh my gosh, I can't do this. God, why? I can't.
Can I say why?
Yeah.
Because we would still have a tune that says that we can't wear hats. Now, I'm being funny about it, but seriously, there was so much humor in the room here for some of the things that you brought up from the last, from these very old books of discipline that culturally made sense at that time.
Right.
And I don't mean that friends should follow the general culture. That's not what I'm saying. But that those actions had purpose. They were illustrative of a position. And that's why this has to be continued.
Great. One of the things that we have said, actually, we're working on the organization chapter now, that we minuted that those forms that have come down to us, those structures that have come down to us, are led structures. People were led to them somehow. And we need to not just throw them out, but we need to find the kernel of truth in those structures that is still there and see where that leads. But they were discerned, all of our structures. So that's where we are now, actually. Where's the kernel of truth? that we're really time. Quote?
I like to say that the process is as important as the result.
Absolutely.
And the fact that you're sharing this to me is as feeding me as what the final product would be. So maybe we can hear you more often.
Or engage. Maybe, yeah. Okay, it is past time. So I will sit down, and these books are all here if you want to come up and look at them. And this library, when I started looking at Faith and Practices, our library has a fantastic collection of historic Faith and Practices. Go in there and look. Everything. Indiana, New York, just wonderful. Philadelphia, London, lots of them. Way back. So, have fun. And thank you very much for listening and joining in.
Can we close in a few minutes of silence? I only drop this close. So, just take a few minutes and then we'll leave.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you, Jan.
Do note the bag. It's a band. Faith and practice when good Quakers go bad.